Hi there. My name's Lauren Farraker. Welcome to the Woof Life Show. We're so excited to have you here. Woof, it means welcome. Today, I'm so honored to be sharing my conversation with Matt Beisner, who runs and created Zendog. You might have heard of Zendog because it has been the feature of a new show on Nat Geo Wild called Dog Impossible. Matt has such a fascinating backstory that includes a lot of rehabilitation, fear of dogs. In my opinion, he's one of the most fascinating trainers I've ever talked to because of his background and how he kind of approaches. We actually did this interview on site where I was able to see the facility. And so it's such an honor to share my interview with Matt Beisner. A lot of the cases that we do reference in this conversation are a part of Dog Impossible. So I highly recommend that you stream it, catch up, because I think this will make this conversation make a lot of sense. Even if you haven't watched it, I believe that you'll enjoy this convo. But I think that if you go back after you've rewatched, it allows everything to make a lot of sense. Please enjoy my conversation with Matt Beisner. Beisner, so excited to be here at the Zendog. This is so exciting.
Thank you. It's really great to sit with you.
Yeah. So tell me about kind of in what you want to share, how the show came about. I'm quite a fangirl of your show. It's just so moving. And I think you don't see dog TV at all like this. And I kind of love that about this.
Yeah. Thank you for saying so. I think that the thing that stands out to me before we get to your question immediately is the power of transformation that's possible. And I've been very open about my own personal story of transformation and how it was really a dog, little black terrier Kingston, who may join us soon, a dog that put me on that path or accompanied me on that path and particularly brought me into the dog world. And I don't know that plenty of people have incredible stories with their dogs.
Yeah.
But I don't know that people know from a teaching, not training, approach that's actually possible for anybody.
Got it.
And it doesn't need to be an aggressive dog. It could be a puppy. I just got a call today from a buddy who said, I'm about to adopt two puppies. Does your method still apply? And I said, oh, absolutely. Much rather get them sooner than later.
Yeah, so, of course, before they develop bad behavior.
Yeah, which calling me in a year.
Yeah.
So what started it was we were minding our own business, and Lena Dunham went public about us helping her rehome her dog.
Got it.
And she sent me an email saying, I just want to let you know. I was sitting in this room checking my phone in a staff meeting. And she said, I just want to let you know that I've mentioned you. And then within a couple of hours, we were getting a lot of inquiries from people about projects and shows. And
that's incredible.
And that's how us arriving at the show started.
Got it.
By the time we ended up connecting with Nat Geo Wild, which was really the best place for us to land, we had a platform to share something that is unique in the world.
Completely. I think that Lena doing that was very brave. Mm-hmm. I think it was pretty incredible for her to be that open and share, especially with her kind of a platform. I think most celebrities don't show you things that don't work.
Right.
And they would allow that to slip. And I remember thinking that's very, very brave. Mm. And I commend her for that. I think that I got my dog through an owner surrender where she was not a fit. I think that if your dog is not a fit, you have to listen.
Agreed. Yeah, that's well said. I felt the same. I had a great experience working with her, and she took a lot of heat, and I understand she's public and people feel really divided, but in essence, we wouldn't be here without her opening the door.
I mean, but your training techniques would stand kind of independent.
They do.
And I think that how you came to be a dog trainer, and I don't know if I want to refer to you as the Buddhist monk. Like, I yeah. like that, but I just think that there's, it yeah. probably doesn't do justice, because I think that there's something far more powerful that's happening if you watch the show, and I've watched all episodes. I think my favorite was it Jindo? The dog that was...
Moo, that needed a collar. So,
yeah. That was difficult to watch, but incredible at the same time. I think that the transformation and resilience of dogs is what your show captures, which,
Yeah, that Lou episode, getting the call for Lou, it was fortuitous that we were filming when we got that call, and that was... it really took my breath knowing what he needed and what was possible.
Yep.
And it's that episode, I appreciate what you said about it being difficult to watch. There is, this stuff is hard.
Yeah.
And it's hard. What we do is, we don't complicate it, but it's hard, and it's hard for the dogs, and it's not intended that anybody gets hurt. It's not intended to be risky or dangerous.
Yeah.
But the reality is that it was traumatic for Lou to have that collar on him and that leash on him. And the reality is, if he didn't have that, he was very likely going to be put down. So so do we choose, I don't want any pain in life, or do we choose the reality that there is pain and we use it as an opportunity to transform?
Yeah, I think that if I was going to coin a term for you, it would be like a dog evolutionist, because you encourage change. And
I like that. I haven't heard that one yet. the Buddhist monk thing is, it does a disservice to Buddhist monks and people who have any committed religious and spiritual practice. And B, I'm Buddhist at best.
Okay.
You know, most of all, I'm somebody who's trying to do the right thing and trying to be surrounded by people that want me to do the right thing. And I keep holding myself accountable and transparent. You know, I'm going to top people in the industries, including vets, and saying, what do you think about this? What is this? And so here we are.
Yeah. I think it's very interesting, your approach in no treats, kind of, it's such a different approach. And it's funny, because my Border Collie lab, I adopted it for not the most socialized dog.
Right.
And I... kind of hindsight being 2020, I rescued her, maybe not the best situation. They didn't like her border collie-ness, but I should have trained her and kind of taken that on. But I don't think I realized that until I started this podcast and talking to people. And I think that I've seen, since watching the show, the shake, all of the ways that the dogs respond, and the eye contact, things that I never would have noticed in terms of those cues. So I appreciate that. Oh, I mean, do you want to kind of at a high level speak to your training method?
Ultimately, what I want to do, what it feels to me my purpose is to change the conversation about how we relate with dogs, which is going to parlay into animals and maybe the world at large. So it's about me doing what's best for the dog, and that's predicated on respect. Our rules of relationship are respect, trust, and love. And what I know experientially, just as a human, is I can love somebody but not be respectful.
Yep.
But if I respect you, then love becomes actionable.
Yep.
You know, and those are the principles really that help me save my life and help me stay alive.
Yeah.
And thrive and be a part of it, you know, life and contribute to life. So for dogs, I needed to create something that was practical, that was based on that profound, not just belief system, but experiential understanding that I've had.
Yeah.
And everything that we do is about the spirit and the structure. Does the structure of the Zen dog, the way we run our business, the way that we interact with people, the way we engage with dogs, the way that we set up the board, does the structure of the business stay congruent with the spirit of the business?
Yep.
And if we have more structure than spirit, we have control, and then we start to get tight about it. And if we have more spirit than structure, things get loose.
Yeah, completely.
And that's really how I have to live my life personally.
Yeah. And to go a little bit into your story of how you kind of, because you were bit as a child. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty crazy that someone who was scared of dogs, I'm sitting talking to who has a Nat Geo show.
Yeah, yeah, it's not really a good pitch. So I got a guy who's a recovering addict, who's afraid of dogs, who was diagnosed anxiety disorder. What do you think? We're going to give him a bunch of dangerous dogs.
Yeah, let's see how this works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a remarkable, it's a remarkable story. I realize that it's mine.
Yeah.
And it's remarkable to be a part of. And because I know firsthand what it is to face fear, and scientifically, 90% of aggression in dogs is fear-based.
Yep.
So there's a very clear parallel for me there, too.
Yeah.
A lot of how I acted was, almost all of how I was acting was born out of fear.
Got it.
And so I see that parallel between me and the dogs. And because of that, if I can just give you a pass and say, you're probably afraid,
yeah,
then immediately it changes the way I'm going to treat you.
Yeah, completely, completely. I mean, it's pretty incredible. I also think that I've never thought that I would see a show with like Ollie, who was the dog, right, who had, that little Boston Terrier had killed a dog.
Right.
Like, and I don't think that, I think sometimes when your dog behaves badly, you feel an embarrassment.
Yes.
You are so intertwined because that dog is a reflection of you.
Yes.
And I think that there's something so challenging to dog training as a result of it, because you're so in the weeds.
Yeah.
That you cannot, you're almost like an ostrich. You cannot see,
right,
the bigger picture. And I think it's pretty incredible the situations that you come into, because you have the 100-foot view that you're able to kind of assess things. I mean, I love the mission that there are no bad dogs. I think that that's very, very powerful.
That 100-foot view, it's really, it's, you know, standing on the shoulders of so many women and men that have brought me to this place, including Steph DiOrio, Caitlin, yep, Montgomery, my wife Brooklyn, who built the company with me. I have this incredible team around me. The view, if in fact that is how somebody experiences me, inherent in the view is that I'm reaching down with my hand out so that I can lift you up, so that you can see.
Yeah.
You can see really where you are in relationship to the dog. And there's nothing, there's very little that a dog person can say to me that I haven't done or experienced, particularly where it comes to shame, embarrassment, the things you were talking about too. The ego,
yeah,
is really the death knell for what we do here.
Yeah.
And that's why this show in particular and the Zen Dog Principle, it has to be about what the dog needs, which comes back to respect. It has to,
yeah,
be what this dog needs. It can never be about what I want, unless what I want is for the well-being of the dog.
So true. And I think that a lot of people are not the happiest dog owners if they don't,
agreed,
tune in to that. I think that there is, not to sound super zen in LA, but I think that there's an energy that you have to ensure that you're respecting and, mm-hmm, listening to each other. I think where I find that I have become very tuned in that way is I decided for my first dog to adopt a Border Collie Lab Mix. Mm-hmm. Probably not the smartest.
It's not an easy starter dog, no.
I'm realizing that I adopted like a Bentley, like, yeah, that was my first car, or Maserati or something that had way too much horsepower.
That had been souped up too. It wasn't a straight Bentley or,
yeah,
Maserati. It had been souped up and nobody told you.
And she had been living in a garage, not mentally stimulated, all of these things. And I think that where I struggle in watching the kind of, I think it was the Honey episode, mm-hmm, with the affection. Mm-hmm. And I think that people that have rescued a dog feel so intrinsically connected that they have to protect.
Yeah.
And I think that, well, Pixie, who's a bitch, mm-hmm, is really pissed about the whole bed thing. Can you explain that?
Sorry, Pixie. I didn't tell your mom to do it, but I did.
I'm not saying that I did it, but it's in the back, okay, of my mind.
So there's a world of dogs, I'm sure, that don't need my help.
Yeah.
Haven't met them yet.
Okay.
Because nobody's calling me because things are going great. I started to look at, about 5 or 6 years ago, I started to look at relationship. And the reason why I did that is because Brooklyn and I had adopted a Staffy Terrier who had excellent behavior, but when she snapped, she literally went to kill. And twice she put my Jindo, my Korean Jindo Renge, in the hospital and almost killed him. Once right in front of me.
Wow.
So she would have passed the canine good citizen test, but there was something, there was the thing underneath the thing. And that's when I realized at that point I'd studied with a lot of people, studied alongside people and studied the work of people that I respect who are really experienced. And there were basically two camps. There was aversive training or there was positive treat-based modification.
Yep.
And I had done both. I don't stand by any of the aversive methods, but I did it. And I'm glad I did it so I can speak properly. So this dog needed something else that wasn't out there.
Got it.
And I started looking at what the day-to-day living was in our relationship. How do I come home? Where do you sleep? How and when do I give you affection? What's our walk like and what's feeding like? Because those are the areas where probably almost every dog owner is going to have, or dog foster, a dog person is going to have interaction. And to really simplify it in a Pavlovian sense, if the dog is so calm that it looks like it's going to take a nap, if the dog is zen and you reward that, that is going to be the energy that you're going to get.
Got it.
If the dog is really smart, maybe like your girl and a lot of the dogs that I meet, the dog will sit or lie down, but that's not the same thing as actually being calm.
They'll kind of fake it.
They'll kind of fake it.
Yeah.
You know? And a lot of dogs will do it because they think they're going to get something. That's the other thing I found about with my treat training was that the treat had more value than I did. And fortunately, the newer science is now demonstrating that the dog's reward system in its brain fires more for its human's attention than anything else.
Yep.
And practically speaking, I got to be able to help my dog or interact with my dog when I don't have anything on me. No water bottle, obviously no choke chains or prong collars, no treats. So if I'm in a relationship with something and it will only listen to me when I have the thing, then I don't have much of a relationship.
It's you're not as powerful as you should be in that relationship where not even going near the concept of alpha, which I don't know if I believe in, but I just think that there has to be that respect. And I think you see when your dog, I think it's all in that kind of eye contact. It's the eye look up. Mm-hmm. It's the check in, all of those things.
I think I really like the way that you said that we're not as powerful as we should be, because we're looking at 15,000 years of domestication. We are genetically responsible for the well-being of dogs on this planet.
Yep.
And being an alpha in my world, there is scientific merit and basis for what alphas do, but it's been grossly misused.
Yep.
And it's been used to justify a lot of inappropriate behavior, and I bought into it years ago. Being an alpha is just being a good parent. I want what's good for this family as a whole.
Yeah.
And that means that I actually have to assume my responsibility.
Yeah.
And with that comes appropriate power.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it. And the other thing that I really love about your show is I think that part of what we talk about in this podcast is promoting adoption.
Yeah.
And there is intrinsically still a challenge that, which I feel, and you can respond to this, is kind of tied to the Sarah McLachlan ads, where it's a rescue is damaged, which I don't think in seeing, especially after watching your show, because the two can't be in the same universe, in my opinion, because you see the resilience and transformation. And I think that a lot of people truly believe, which I see this on Facebook, I stalk, I listen, and it's not a damage. You, even if you don't know the background of that dog, sure, you might have to work a little harder. But I just appreciate that you came to the aid and kind of promoted rescue also in terms of finding dogs forever homes that otherwise probably would have been euthanized.
I feel like a rescue dog myself, and I don't want to be the one to make the judgment call on whether or not a dog's life is valuable.
Yeah.
Now, I have had people come to me because I'm often the last stop on the block, and people will say, do you think this dog is a good fit for our family? Or I've had groups come to me, rescue groups come to me and say, we're on the edge of putting this dog down.
Yep.
For any number of reasons, all of which may be valid, can you help us? And what I can do is help you see what I see, and then you can make an informed and scientifically sound and experientially understood decision.
Got it.
But I can't, and I did put that dog that I'm talking about that we adopted, the Staffy Nuala, I did put her down.
Wow.
And I am public about that because I was up against it.
Yeah.
And there was nothing new. And what was available was pretty heavily fear-based.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going to go down that road with that dog. So.
Got it.
So, A, I've been through it. B, I feel like a rescue. See, there's also, you're right, you know, a lot of what the Zen Dog challenges people with, and the response has been overwhelmingly positive. And I understand that part of the challenge is that this seems counter-emotional.
Yeah.
It certainly seems counterintuitive. And it'll poke people because you can't do this and not look at yourself.
I completely, that might be the power, because my husband and I, we're just gaping jaws as we watch your show. And I think that we always kind of pause in between as we're streaming and we kind of talk about it. And we're like, because you see behavior, whether my dog's not dangerous at all, but I think she can be slightly reactive. And you see, when you see the trigger in another dog, when you're not emotionally tied to that dog, you're able to kind of see that, oh, that's why these are the triggers. My Pixie has a great Stegosaurus that she just lights up. It's great.
Cool. Oh, that's sweet. That's really sweet.
She's great.
I didn't answer your question about the bed, I realized.
Yeah.
I think your listeners almost got off the hook.
Oh, my God.
So all things being about relationship, when I was looking at the day-to-day living, I thought, because it's I didn't invent this, you know, get your dogs off the bed. People are really divided about it. But I thought, okay, let's take a look at this. And I got our dogs off the bed, and we had 3 of our 5 on the bed. It always seemed like a good idea when we were going to sleep. It never felt great when we woke up, and we repeated the insanity for a long time. And what we found is I not only got them off the bed, I stopped talking to them for 48 hours.
Wow.
And then I got to see a few things. One, how much I'm talking at my dogs, telling them what to do, commanding. I don't use commands. I don't want to be in a relationship with something I have to command. I'd rather teach you than train you. It's a different experience. And I saw that I was talking too much. I saw that by day 3 that they started to regard me differently when I did say something. It changed the power of what I had to say and how I would touch them.
Got it.
And the third thing that I saw, which I've now seen carry over into thousands of homes, since we got our dogs off the bed, I've probably met 4,000 dogs, and less than 40 are not in the bed.
Okay.
That's how popular it is. So you're in good company. So the beds, the way I simplify it is I do know that altitude changes attitude. An insecure dog will often get higher up, like the little dog that will run up to the back end of the couch and then tell you that it's boss.
Yeah.
So altitude is attitude. The second thing is that the bed is all about what I wanted. It's got nothing to do with what the dog needs.
Got it.
So if I give the highest value treat, which is my affection, in the highest value place in the human experience, which is my bed, to a dog that has some level of insecurity or down the road is going to demonstrate something like that, then I'm basically telling the dog, here we are, this is really delicious, but I don't really know what I'm doing.
Got it.
And then my vet told me something interesting, and I need to get more info on that. She said that the window for the dog developmentally to be on the bed ends at about 4 weeks old.
Oh, wow.
Which in essence, how old is your girl?
She is 13.
Okay, so it's kind of like having an 80-year-old adopted daughter sleep in your bed.
Yeah.
It's creepy.
I actually like that she sleeps in my husband's spot because
I don't blame you.
My husband knows the power.
I don't blame you.
Dynamic.
Yep. I don't blame you. So, you know, like I said, those dogs may not need our help, but we saw it, and you could follow. I say this to people when I work in the homes. You could do everything I recommend and leave your dogs on the bed, and probably nothing would stick.
Got it.
You could do nothing I recommend and have your dogs off the bed, and you will probably see change very quickly. And I don't know why, and I think it's such a hot button. I don't think science is going to study it anytime soon.
I mean, that would be really interesting. I do notice that I'm... my girl will, especially as she's gotten older, she wakes me up earlier and earlier.
That's common. That happens a lot.
And I notice when I tell her, no, you can't come back on the bed, you got to go kind of deal with yourself. She she does this kind of look to me that it's not sass, but it's like, okay, you're in charge.
Yeah. And for now.
And yeah, for now. Yeah. I mean, she knows that she's got the power, but I don't know. I like that I'm run by a border collie lab.
Yeah, that's all you got to know. I mean, really, if that's what you like and you know that your dog is secure and feels comfortable in the world that it needs to live in,
yeah,
you probably don't need my help. But what the show demonstrates, what you were speaking to, is your dog may be telling you, or one's dog may be telling somebody, I'm not really as cool with this as it looks.
Yeah.
And that's a different consideration.
Yeah. It's, I would say that she far outweighs her relationship with people mm-hmm. than she does dogs.
Yeah.
She just kind of could care less. So I think that her working dog, kind of that thing has taken over, mm-hmm. is been my assessment in terms of how I feel that I've not mismanaged, but if I was going to be a little critical, which yeah. I think you have to be as a dog owner, I think you have to be introspective to realize just maybe if you were not to do it over, but the hindsight being 2020. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There are things now, my dogs, I sometimes say to people, it's a wonder my dog survived me. You know, I was a hot mess when I first met Little Kingston. And like I said, I was practicing aversive methods for starters, and you know, they stayed with me.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be here if it weren't for them. And accurate self-appraisal, you know, you were saying that we have to look inward, and that's really what this does. And that just in general is not comfortable and
yeah.
not easy.
Yeah.
And I want to build part of that as the support system for what we do here. You know, people don't need to stay ashamed. They don't need to stay isolated. They don't need to stay alone. They don't need to stay confused or vague.
Yeah.
You know, what happens in vagueness stays in vagueness.
It's true.
Not a good place to be.
It's true. And I think that there's a lot to the relationship with your dog that you can just kind of live a hidden life. Like mm-hmm. Ollie, for example, I found her owner or his owner so brave.
Yeah.
To be public, like, I don't think I would have the gall to do that. I really admired that because she's got a different way that lens that she looks at the world. And so she's, and it seems like Ollie's older.
Yeah.
That she just has to kind of be the best version of what she knows, living with what she does. And I think that a lot of people don't listen to their dog in the way that they should. Where
yeah.
I think that that's part of the respect that is so key to kind of the Zen dog method.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, or they don't listen because they don't know how, or they don't listen at all.
You know, yeah.
Dogs are malleable to a fault.
Got it. Yeah. So I wanted to hear, all of your dogs are incredible. So Pierre's a stud.
Yeah, he's stunning. He's still waiting for his own. First he wanted his own Instagram page, which I haven't set up. Now he wants his own offshoot of the show.
Ooh,
yeah.
I would be into that. I would super be into that.
It'd be really something to watch Pierre go around the country.
Well, I saw the photo of you like all dressed up in a suit and like with Pierre, and yeah. I was like, that's a studly dog.
He's stunning.
Like yeah. he's just gorgeous. And yeah. I think I've been talking a little bit about this, but huskies are so what you're seeing right now as a result of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
In the shelters, and it's not a dog for everyone.
No. Getting a husky without knowing what you're getting is like expecting an incredible season series finale and not getting it.
Oh, we're cutting deep on this yeah. one.
How do I keep friends?
Yeah. With all respect to the HBO cast, this is Matt's opinion.
It is. I'm such a huge fan. So, but what does happen, and we see this happen, you know, a dog is in a hit movie.
Yep.
That's why I love we're seeing more and more rescues, more mixed breeds
yep.
that are appearing in feature films, that are the focal points of books. And
yeah.
We're really opening ourselves up. It's become very hip to rescue. It's become necessary. The laws are changing towards
yep.
that. And so a lot of people, we're a small part of that, and a lot of people have just made incredible efforts so that a movie can be about the multiple lives of a rescue dog.
Yeah.
And and it can make $80 million.
You know? I mean, Lady and the Tramp was completely cast with rescues. And I think that the Tramp was, the Tramp was at a kill shelter like a week before or something like that. Yeah. And so it's pretty incredible to think where we've come. I also have chatted on all diss celebrities a little. How celebrities are now referring to that they're adopting dogs that are very clearly not adopted.
Yeah.
It's a pet peeve of mine.
I don't have that direct experience, but I do know that that's out there.
Yeah.
I do know that there are things that transparency would reveal that I think would shock people.
Yeah.
In terms of money that's being generated, where funds are going, where the dog really came from. I want to say it's kind of part of this conversation. It's back to something you said earlier, that because the primary window of brain development for dogs is 2 to 10 weeks old, this is neuroscience. I learned this from Dr. Ian Dunbar, who's one of the masters in the field. It doesn't really matter if you eat your dog from a high-end breeder or from a street rescue in many ways, because if we don't treat that 2 to 10 week window, then what happens is the dogs begin to miswire neurologically. The cortex and the frontal lobe don't develop. So by 10 weeks old, believe it or not, dogs are wired to be dog social, human social, potty trained, and chew trained, which includes bite inhibition.
Wow.
Right.
Wow. So that makes the episode with, I think it was Pax.
Pax, 4 weeks old.
Yep.
Yep.
I'm not a nerd for your show at all.
I really appreciate it. So that's exactly, that's a great example. And that is why these people were in a boondoggle.
Yeah.
You know, and they were making a sincere effort. And Pax was, you said something interesting, you know, they're not damaged. And I almost used that word. And so I prefer what you're saying, that great damage had been done to this dog, but he wasn't a damaged dog.
Yeah. Well, I think that it's kind of very intrinsic to your message. There are no bad dogs. Right. I think damage can be done to dogs.
Yeah.
But I think that most of them can undo that. It's not all.
No, we haven't seen a dog yet that we haven't been able to help. And that's different than saving.
Yeah.
I was asked a question once, you know, have you ever failed a dog? And I've come up short a lot, but I don't know that I've ever failed. You know, I've worked up to the point where I could.
Yeah.
And it's relative to the dog and it's relative to the situation. And that's not a cop out.
Yeah.
That's the reality of, you know, living with a dog. And so we have to look at success in terms of the dog's growth.
Got it. And so to go back, we're going to slightly do a sidebar. So how did Nama and Pierre, how did they come to you? So I have a list of your dog's names because I'm going to make sure where I think that there's some that I don't know. So it's Pierre, Kingston, Nama, and Deja.
Yeah, Deja Blue.
She's gorgeous.
Yeah, isn't she something? Deja is, she's a blue nose pit mixed with a blue Lacy, which I understand is the state dog of Texas. It's a ranching dog, but
interesting.
Blue Lacys look like blue nose pits as puppies, and I figure they're being bred and sold because it's easy to sell a blue nose pit.
Interesting.
Pass it off that way. So Deja was found at about 8 weeks old. Shout out to Lovely Rescue. Deja was found about 8 weeks old out in the desert near Coachella, and we got her at about 10 weeks old, and she grew up with our other four dogs, Nama, Kingston, Renge, Pierre, and they raised her, and that was incredible.
Got it.
I don't know how she's so skilled. She's never been hurt by a dog. She's never hurt a dog. And so to watch her work with Ollie was jaw-dropping for me.
I think I screamed at my television. But it was so powerful to see, and I was actually going to ask you about that, because you don't see many trainers that use dogs in the rehabilitation of dogs.
Yeah.
And it's so logical, because most of when I would say I see dogs acting out the most is around other dogs.
Right.
And it's not towards human. Obviously, I'm not in everyone's home because that would be creepy. But I think that that's when you see some of the worst behavior.
Yeah.
So tell me about how that method really evolved, because I think it's so interesting.
Out of necessity, you know, to me, it's
what's vital to what we do is that things are set up safely.
Yep.
So we'll use appropriate equipment. Things will look stressful and scary to dogs. I don't keep dogs in states of distress.
Yeah.
You know, I know that from my work personally. The show shows what needs to be shown for an arc of transformation, and the transformation is real. But if we watch Deja in that example with Ollie, she hung over him like a wrestler. She never put her mouth on him. She literally put her body. I have a nephew that has Asperger's.
Yep.
And Ollie was vibrating so hot, and Deja just draped herself over him.
Wow. As if to say,
I got you. You don't have to do this. And I couldn't have taught Deja to do that. But what I did do is I taught, and my dogs taught me along the way, it was born, to answer your question, this was born out of necessity, because I couldn't keep helping dogs in people's homes if I couldn't help them, you know, at a yard, per se.
Yeah.
Brooklyn and I used to work out of our home, and so that's how we started.
Oh, wow.
So I had built this relationship with these five dogs of ours.
Got it.
And then I needed them to help me. And
got
that's
it.
Literally how it started. And then I needed to hone and change and make more safe and those kinds of things along the way, so that we could do something where a dog could come all the way up against its fear and then get through to the other side.
Got it. What was, out of any of the episodes, what was one, or do you ever have moments where you even get overwhelmed? Because you do seem so calm. And I understand that you have to remain that for being the 100-foot view. But are there ever situations that you find yourself, you know, having to kind of take a break? Or was there anything that we saw that?
I still have fear of dogs.
Got it.
Depends on the situation. You know, one of the things, because it can't be about us, it has to be about the dog here, the Zen dog. I'll tap out. I'll be in a yard. This will happen on any given day. I'll be in a yard with somebody and I'll say, I don't feel like I'm a good help here right now. Or
interesting.
There's a slew of dogs. Everybody has a dog that's their bugaboo, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a couple of them. I'm working down the list and we're actually making great strides, but they legitimately scare me. I was in the yard the other day with a dog and he was making incredible progress. And then he kind of bugged and I thought it was going to be like it was the first time. And I literally jumped the holding fence.
Wow.
Because I thought, I'm not going to risk this. I'll come back and revisit it. And it ended up working out. So I still do get scared sometimes. But the thing is, if I'm in somebody's home, I got to do it.
Yeah.
You know, so I got to make sure that I set them up to set their dog up safely. I want the dog to succeed. And as far as the filming was concerned, what we had to do was have a safety meeting before every day of filming.
Yep.
And if we do that, then we're all locked in a different way.
Totally.
And I didn't really see anything because I was extra careful, because we had cameras and crew and things that would be disturbing to dogs normally. I was I just was more cautious than normal, and so I wasn't afraid about what was happening there.
Interesting. I think that the one that I found probably the most emotionally taxing, other than Lou, was the bulldogs.
The presidents.
Yeah, the presidents. Because it was just, it was a lot of dogs.
Yeah.
And they were gorgeous and super cute. But it was funny in terms of seeing that dog psychology really like acting out in terms of all of the different personalities. Yeah.
Yeah, that was heartbreaking. And it was fascinating. And it was a great way to start the series, because we got to see that the dog that was known as the tormentor was actually afraid and under-socialized.
Yep.
And he had wrongly earned this nickname, understandably, and he was stuck with it.
Yep.
You know, he was known as the problem child. And, that was really that was not an easy situation to be in.
Yeah.
And I don't like watching violence.
Well, and it was, I think it's so chaotic when it's in a home, too, because you don't, like, with, if you're outside of your home, you have places to run.
Right.
Like you can seek shelter.
Right.
Your fight or flight kind of kicks in. But if you're in a home,
right,
it's a different. And I think that that's something that's so powerful to the show too, because it forces you to watch something that in your brain is telling you,
yeah,
I got to go.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good point. It's primal. And back to what you were saying earlier, I have to trust the work. The work has been born out of a lot of my, slips and mistakes, and it's really been tested by this, by the incredible team that we have, and I trust the work. I don't always trust myself.
Got it.
But I trust the work implicitly.
That's, I mean, that's very, very powerful. And I think most people that have a show and kind of are an external facing don't say, I make mistakes. Yeah. And I think that that's something that when you're working with something as diverse and powerful, intelligent, dynamic as dogs, it makes sense that it would be an evolution.
Yeah. Yeah.
In terms of your approach.
Yep. That's right. We have to, it's a new generation and it's a new opportunity.
Completely.
And we really can, given the reach that we have now, and Disney bought Nat Geo Wild and season one is global already. And
yep.
We have an opportunity to have a new conversation. I don't have the answers. I'm not going to finish the conversation, but I am starting it.
Yeah. I think that there's, I think that what I would encourage people to watch about your show is looking at the human dynamic with dogs,
right.
And you seriously, like, you evaluate that entire situation and put yourself, because you're looking at someone's home. Mm-hmm. I think Lou was the only one I didn't personally feel as connected
right.
with, because
he didn't really, he wasn't domesticated.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But I think every other dog, like the pack situation, like I definitely with, thinking about how much I've talked about ending backyard breeding and
yeah,
how
yes.
like it's better if you just get a rescue dog that might be 2 years because it might have been in a home, gone through all of those transitions. And I've started referring to rescue dogs as certified pre-owns because it's like, it's such a good buy.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It can be. It can be, and it's also, it's never too late.
Yeah.
We create and potty trained a 15-year-old blind Shih Tzu a few years ago. Couple was having a baby, and
wow.
they needed to get the dog off the bed, and the dog, they didn't want the dog to wander around going to the bathroom at night, and
wow.
never too late.
That's pretty powerful. I mean, I think that that's a super powerful way to end our conversation. Are there any common mistakes that dog owners should avoid?
Yeah, petting a dog when it's not totally calm and you haven't asked for permission. And you'll see plenty of examples of asking for permission on the show.
Yep.
The great Ken McCourt said, touching an animal without permission is a violation of nature.
I agree with that.
I agree with it too, and I'd never thought of it. And we're certainly at a place in time where we can actually give that a little bit more credence with these animals that live with us.
Yeah.
And if I touch you without your permission, I disrespect you. It tells you I don't know how to read you. And then what are you going to do? You're not going to trust me.
Yeah. It tells you that you don't care to respect me enough to ask.
Uh-huh.
And I think especially I've noticed that with people with Pixie that she'll kind of give a look like, who is this?
Right.
And she's the friendliest, especially with people. And so then she'll look at me and
right.
I'll have to say, it's okay. I mean, we haven't run into a situation where it wasn't. But
yeah.
We keep kind of going back to the listening to the cues. And I think that it's just so powerful and eye contact with your dog in terms of diffusing, talking. And then I think the most powerful thing that I just get left with is that your praise is more powerful than anything else.
Yeah.
And yeah, remember that, guys.
Yeah. Everything you have that you need is within you.
And that's a hell of a way to end it.
Thanks so much for having me. It's really
yeah,
a delight.
Thank you so much for being here. Such a fan. Please produce all of the shows and make that Pierre show because
yeah.
I would watch.
We just got a live stream in 24 hours.
Yeah. I mean, it could be invasive, but we're in.
I don't think he would protest, actually.
Okay, cool. All awesome. Right. We're in. Well, thank you so much.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It.